The Linux Link Tech Show is proudly sponsored by Open Country, providers of OCM, award-winning systems management software for the Linux Enterprise, and exclusive sponsors of the Webmin Project.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show! Tech Show! Tech Show! Yeah!
The Linux Link Tech Show is on.
Is on.
Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology,
and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Yeah, welcome to the Linux Link Tech Show, episode 162, right?
162.
I need to really trim down that show intro. You know, fade it out a lot sooner because I really can't control it over here. Well, actually, I think I could.
A lot of people complaining about it.
The trick is to, you know, talk over the back end fade. You know?
Yeah, I know, but it's just, it doesn't fade until, like, about 30 seconds after. So it's just...
That's the talk over part, Dan.
Yeah, but it doesn't fade. It's still, like, really loud.
It just goes loud and it just kind of chops right off.
Yeah, so...
Clap it in Audacity and fade it out good.
You know? I'll do that when I increase the number of local users allowed on the IRC.
On the chat server.
So you guys can get in.
On the compressor, there's an input on there, which will, if you drive it in through there, when the mics come on, it'll duck it down.
Oh, it'll duck down
and fade
it out.
Of it, yeah.
Ooh.
We never quite got that portion of it working, though.
You know what blows me away, before we introduce our wonderful guest, that invariably, every Wednesday night, somewhere around between 8:20 and 8:30, my mom's got to call me. Even though I told her I do a show every Wednesday, she calls me and she's like, "Are you doing your show?" And I'm like, "Yes." And so, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know." Invariably. So, Pat, introduce our guest, or whoever wants to introduce our wonderful guest tonight. I got to go see if there's an emergency.
Okay. Well, we've got Neil Cherry, the author of Linux Smart Homes for Dummies and the webmaster of a really good Linux home automation website. Neil, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So you're into Linux automation for home?
Just a little bit.
How long have you been playing with this stuff?
The home automation stuff probably dates back to about 1983. Linux, pretty much close to day one. So you know, marry the two together and you've got, I've been here a while.
So at what point did for home automation for Linux become usable?
It was a long time ago, actually. X10 had come out with a little device called the CM11A. It's not a great device. Under Windows, it has a tendency to lock up and the software that came with it wasn't very good. But under Linux...
Oh, I can't believe that.
I know. they try so hard. But under Linux, I had been running... I had one here that had run for about 6 years. It ran great. Unfortunately, it went toast the other day. So
that sucks.
Yep. I've been having a little bit of trouble with the home automation lately. The electricity into the place decided to go on and off several times really fast. Not good for the computers.
So, Neil, I'm a complete noob with Linux home automation. You know, this is something I might want to try down the road. What are the very basics that you need to know to get going?
All right, you're going to need a server that you're going to run 24 hours a day. The good news is that Linux is stable enough for it. Basically, at the moment, we're in the middle of a transition period where X10 had been the king for a number of years, but now we've got a bunch of other protocols that are coming in, right, that you can use. There's Z-Wave, which is wireless. All right, there is UPB, which is Universal Power Bus. Very popular in the United States. I don't know that it'll be allowed to be in Europe because the voltage of the signals goes a little too high for the FCC, the equivalent in Europe. Right. Then there's Insteon, which I'm hoping will be the successor to X10. X10 has a little bit of a flaw in that it sends the signals through the power line at an incredible baud rate of approximately 10 characters per second. Okay? Not very fast. Okay? The Insteon, it works faster. All right, so you can send these characters through, the devices interpret them. You get a response time of about 1/10 of a second, whereas with X10, you're lucky if you get half a second. So you got your X10, which is the old stuff that's been around for a while. Most people can make it work, not always reliable because it's kind of an open loop protocol. You've got Insteon, which is the closed loop protocol, sends the stuff over the line faster. UPB, which is also much faster, works very well, at least from the folks that I've spoken to. And then the Z-Wave, where it's all wireless. I haven't played with the Z-Wave yet, though. So getting started in it, you buy a few devices, you plug in a lamp, and then you start controlling things.
So is the X10 then at this point still pretty usable, or is it so slow that it really is not very usable anymore?
X10 is on the edge of being tolerable.
Right? Okay.
Most people who try to use it, they don't try to walk in a room, flick a switch, and on it goes. Right? You know, you wait that half second, and I know my wife, if I were to automate the entire house, that half second delay would be infuriating.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The Insteon, I had it set up in here, unfortunately, when I blew up my server and spent a whole lot of time writing the book. I didn't get a lot of chance to play with it. I just got started with it just when the book started coming out, or when I was supposed to start writing the book.
So is there a lot of noise problem and stuff like that with the X10 stuff?
Yeah. It's not noise itself, but devices that suck the signal down into a black hole. Okay? Your standard PC power supply, very good at being a black hole. Audio equipment, TV sets, very good. Your UPS, very good at eating all the extra signals, because this stuff looks like noise to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The way to get around that is you buy this little filter. You put it on the line in front of your UPS, in front of your TV, in front of your computer, and basically you've eliminated that black hole, and then the signal can go around the house.
So what kind of, like, how close are we to having, you know, the Star Trek kind of experience?
Star Trek.
From a Mr. House thing?
Holodeck.
Like I want to, yeah, not like a holodeck, but I want to, like, walk into my house, and when I walk in the house, I want it to, you know that I'm there and maybe turn the lights on for me or the TV or something like that. And,
wipe your nose, pat you on the back,
yeah,
pour
you
beer.
Know.
I think we're a bit of a waste. For the cheap stuff, we're a ways away from that yet. Right? For the high-end system, like Bill Gates, where he can afford to have the nice little badges put on his shirt and stuff, you know, it's a geek badge. Hey, I'm a geek, but I got billions of dollars, so don't argue with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he walks into his house, and he's got this little badge, and the house recognizes him and walks around and knows that when he walks in, you know, certain things are going to happen. That kind of stuff, I don't think we're going to see it.
Right, yeah, but I mean, I don't think he's going to see it either because he's using Microsoft to do his house.
Yeah, but he's got about a couple hundred servers in his house, so that redundant. You know, it's redundant.
Right.
sort of like Microsoft, it's redundant.
As one server explodes, another three take its place.
That's right. Another one, we just drop it right in. Hey, they're cheap. The stuff that you're going to see around your house, at least when I got started, my wife had a few places where the lights were in. Places where they were really just tough to get at.
Right.
Right. There was the garage light. You had to go out to the garage and turn it on in order to have the garage light on. And it happens to be at the edge of the driveway, so it's a good light to have on, so people walk up, they can see.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So what I did was I threw a cheap X10 switch on it. And it kind of works. It's one of the problems with X10 is that X10 kind of works. Mm-hmm. It happened to be that a lot of the houses in the U.S., they run on 120, and we call it two-phase. It's not really two-phase, but for the, you know, for the definitions here, it's good enough. The phases are separate of each other. All right. In order to get, if my computer is on one phase and the X10 switches on the other phase, you need these little things called signal bridges or repeaters or signal amplifiers.
Mm-hmm.
For houses that are about 2,000 square feet and above, you're supposed to have a signal bridge. Excuse me, an amplifier repeater. Right. I discovered that in my house I have enough black hole stuff here and not enough filters put in place that... I need it on an 1,800 square foot house. So I've got my computer on one side of the phase and the garage light on the other. I send out the signal. The signal goes along the wires. It gets to the amplifier. It gets repeated onto the other phase and then gets sent on its way. The X10 switch in the garage then works some of the time. I think we're pretty good to about 80% of the time. Then I have to go out there and fight with the switch. I think there's something wrong with that switch. It's time to replace it.
And these new devices that are coming out, you said they're going to take care of a lot of that problem?
Yeah, it looks like they're going to be really good. The nice thing, the bad thing about X10 is you send out a signal, and you have no clue if the thing goes on or not. Right? It sends out, I wait, my wife says, hey, garage light's not on. I have to go and check the computer. Did it send it? Yeah, it sent it. Then I have to go there and check it out. The Insteon, their signal bridge across the two phases, one is wireless, and it works in both directions, whereas the other signal bridge, you send a signal. Actually, that one also works in both directions. My apologies. But the one thing that Insteon and the UPB do is that you send out a signal, and the device on the other end sends a signal back if it received it. It'll either say, I received it, and it was good. That's an acknowledgement. It'll send another, which is, I received it, but it was no good. Couldn't do anything with the command. If nothing is received, obviously your command went nowhere fast. Right? So you've got pretty good clue as to what's going on now. So the Insteon, that looks much better. A little bit more expensive than the cheap X10, but still, you know that extra little bit of you sent it, you knew it went on, that's nice.
And these new products don't have any problem interfacing with Linux, or is that something that's still being worked on?
I'm still in the middle of writing the device drivers. Actually, let me rephrase that. There's a bunch of folks in the community. Bruce Prenz just released some code to us that allows us to use libhid,
mm-hmm.
which really is nice in that a lot of the people want to use the USB as the interface. There's also a serial interface. My serial code, unfortunately, screws up the PLC, that's the computer interface.
Mm-hmm.
It screws it up in such a way that you can't issue any commands anymore, and you have to return it to them so they can issue you another PLC. I got to work on that code. But the USB, there's some control code in there, flow control that allows our code to work a little bit better, and we're in the middle of taking care of that by writing some new device drivers and stuff. The code I initially wrote was a device driver you had to put into the kernel. Because it's HID, you got to blacklist it, you got to recompile the kernel, you got to compile the device driver for that kernel. Bit of a pain. With the libhid, you don't have to go through all those steps anymore. So we're hoping that'll shorten the whole thing. I can start writing code soon.
Link. Yeah.
Yo.
You were carrying the conversation and let it drop?
Who dropped?
Link. Did those guys just drop off?
I don't know.
No, we're here.
Oh.
We're here. We're getting a little crackling over here, but we're still here.
No, you guys are coming through perfectly over here to me.
Right. Yeah, I hear you fine.
All right. So you set up all this home automation stuff. What happens when your systems go down? Does that mess everything up?
Oh, what does that mess up? 2 weeks ago, my server here crashed. At first, thought it was a bad hard disk. Get a new hard disk, put it in. It's behaving the same way as the other hard disk. Oh, good. The other hard disk I have is good. I can save the information. Put it back onto the motherboard, try booting up, make a few changes. It turns out I have a bad hard disk and I have a bad motherboard. So both had to be replaced, and it's just the IDE interface. So I lose everything. I lost my Asterisk server, which is interfaced to the software I use, which is called Mr. House. And I have, you know, everything running, getting information off the internet. I have it, you know, timed exact for when lights and stuff come on and off. I have it so that the Asterisk server blacklists a bunch of folks who have been calling me. You know, that little list that you're supposed to sign up for doesn't work very well. Asterisk works much better. Well, for the last 2 weeks, none of it has happened. I've got the telemarketers calling. The lights have not come on. My wife has said, you know, hey, you better straighten out that system or I'm going to strangle you. You get spoiled. You get spoiled by this stuff. So, yeah, it's really screwed up the system, and I'm about to get another system with RAID controller, and I've got the UPS sitting here ready to go. I've got a few small ones, but this stuff is going to stay up and running.
So this wonderful server that you had running, it had every service in the world running on it. Did it have backups running on it?
Well, I backed up. So the last time I backed up was March. Because A few of the new things, such as the Asterisk interface to Mr. House that I was using with the caller ID and everything, that disappeared. I'll have to rewrite that. So, but everything else up to March I have actually backed up. And I have it backed up on separate hard drives and DVD. And right after that, the book got into full gear, and I had finished the last part of the book and pushed it out the door, and I kind of ignored my computers after that for a while.
That's got to be brutal.
Yeah, I don't know which is worse, my wife being pissed off at me or the I have to rewrite the code. You know, I get very anal about that.
Sometimes the rewriting the code stuff is a good idea, but it's a lot better idea to do it when you already have the code than to do it when you don't have the code anymore.
I had the Asterisk stuff talking to Mr. House real nice. The only problem I had was there was an upgrade on Mr. House, and I had done something wrong with the caller ID database, and I wasn't getting the database. But I was still getting the caller ID, and I was getting the blacklist, and you know, you'd come into the room, you'd look at the computer screen, and would say, hey, this is the person that's calling. You know, I can ignore them. You know, in fact, I was diverting them to the SIT tone to, you know, a bunch of folks. And then I had a few people who were calling in where they weren't getting the SIT. Instead, they were going to a specific, you know, voicemail box that got a specific message on it. And then everyone else was getting forwarded to the little answering machine I have here. My wife still doesn't trust my home automation 100%. I know not why.
So, did you? I thought I read on your website a while back that you also had microphones and stuff like that placed throughout your house.
No, I don't have the microphones. I'm not much for the audio. The folks who are really into the audio, trying to think of who that is. There are some people. They're basically using the Windows stuff, and they've got the audio around the house, and they're. Basically, they're able to speak into the microphones that they've got all over the place, and the voice recognition does its thing. Mm-hmm. Right now, Linux is a little short on voice recognition. Right. We've got something called Sphinx. The university folks are working on it. We had ViaVoice, but basically that was stopped. You know, the production of that from IBM was stopped with Red Hat 6.2.
Mm-hmm.
Some folks managed to get it to install in the later kernels, but then you have to start loading all sorts of libraries, and you have to start playing tricks. Not something you really want to do on some of the modern Linux systems. You know, you got to be kind of careful of that. So I do not describe that in the book. I keep away from ViaVoice.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And I haven't played with the Sphinx yet, because it looks like that was within the last year that folks have really gotten that working pretty well.
Now, your asterisk interface that you had going on, what kind of thing was that? Was that a the kind of deal where, like, you could pick up a phone anywhere in the house and just dial a number in and it would, you know, turn a light on for you or something like that?
Oh, now you're reminding me. Yeah, I had that working, too. I had that working, and it would come back. It would give you a menu. I created it simple because I was in the middle of writing the book, and, you know, I'm really not supposed to take time from writing the book, but I have to write code. You know, I have to write code. So I wrote a nice little menu system in Asterisk that said, you know, one, you could turn these. It was turn on modes, you know, like the nighttime mode. And it would go out, tell Mr. House to do something, and it would turn on a bunch of lights one step after the other. It was rather nice. And when it was done, I would use Festival to send back a string, you know, some information that would say everything was completed okay or it didn't work at all. You know, something as simple as that. That won't be too difficult to get working again. It's just first I got to get the Asterisk up and running. And, yeah, you could pick up any phone in the house and dial an extension, a specific extension, and you would get the menu. In fact, you could call from outside the house if you knew what extension to dial after you got in. You could get to that and turn things on and off, which my wife has gotten used to me doing during the middle of the day. I only have specific stuff here I do tests with. I'm not allowed to test with the rest of the house.
In other words, he's got like a one lamp on his desk that he turns on and off, right?
Yep. My wife sees it going on and off and says, "Oh, Neil's showing off."
Yeah.
So now, one lamp now, on your now desk, do the rest of the house, you lazy bastard.
Actually, I've decided that the Linux box I've got right now, it's a one gigahertz box. I've been able to run it on smaller boxes. I had a 300 megahertz box. The problem with that is that the Asterisk and the Mr. House on at the same time causes problems. Asterisk needs a bit more bandwidth. And I was doing just SIP, so I had no copper lines going into the back of the box or the little modem cards that go in that you can convert voice, you know, into IP, you know, do the SIP that way. Those little modem cards I've discovered, they don't work very well. They really kill the processor. They're brutal. So you need a much bigger box for those.
So who are you using as your SIP provider?
No one. I was just using straight copper coming off the telco.
Oh, okay.
I've also played with the IAXY, which is Free World Dial-Up.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a VoIP provider, you know, the CallVantage AT&T stuff, which I take it off the back of their little ATA box. I put it into the back of a Linksys 3102, and that's how I get it into my Asterisk. Mm-hmm. So I've got three lines here for the Asterisk box. Plus the, you know, anything else that I might have playing with on the internet, you know, from normal SIP, like the Free World Dial-Up, which is not really SIP.
Now, have you, in addition to Asterisk and all the home automation stuff, have you been playing around with the Myth TV?
That one, I had trouble getting everything going because I kind of blew my book. I blew up my computer twice while writing the book. So I turned that over to a gentleman named Terry, and he wrote the stuff on Myth. I'm dying to play with it. Unfortunately, discovered that my second server that I have sitting here as a backup, the RAM memory in the box is all bad. So I don't have a box to put it on. Currently, also, I've got TiVo running in the house, which it works well enough. I got an old one of the S1s, you know, the first series of TiVo.
Uh-huh.
So I've got software sitting on there, and I can control that from Mr. House also.
Sounds like someone needs some more hardware over there. New hardware.
Well, yeah. I've got very new hardware sitting here right now, which hopefully will be the center point of my home automation stuff. I got a nice 200 megahertz ARM board. Right? It's a tiny board. It's a little bit bigger than a postcard. And it's got 32 meg of RAM on it, and it's got 8 meg of flash. It's got Ethernet, it's got the compact flash interface, it's got a bunch of other stuff on it. That's going to become the central point of my home automation system. I still have Mr. House. That will run on a separate server, but if it goes down, the rest of the home automation stuff is going to stay up. I haven't figured out where I'm going to load the asterisk yet. I may put that on an NSLU 2 box. That may be able to handle the two SPA, the two Linksys devices that I have for the telephone. Hopefully it will handle that.
Sounds like someone needs a vacation to do all this stuff.
No, I do this in my part-time. I am a little on the hyper side. So I tend to do a lot of this stuff all day long. But I do have work I have to do, and that can't be avoided. So I do put in at least 8 hours there, otherwise I'll lose my job. That's always a bad thing. I can't play with toys then.
Right. No toys if you can't buy them.
That's right.
Neil,
we
had a question in the IRC. They wanted you to repeat which protocol that you said was the best. And I think that was what, for asterisk?
For the asterisk stuff, I like the SIP so far. I don't think it's the best protocol. I'm hoping somebody will come out with something better. Also something that will give us a little more bandwidth. At work, I actually play with SIP, and I know all the problems of SIP over over the Internet. And SIP is a tough protocol because of those small little packets. But making them huge doesn't exactly fix the problem. It's just there's a lot of small packets, and there are a vast number of them. And the switches and the routers have a hard time keeping up with it. So at the moment, SIP seems to work well.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of places are pushing the SIP.
How about for the home automation portion of it? Which one do you like the best? Two-part question. Which one do you like the best, and which one do you see eventually being the best after you're done writing the device drivers?
All right, we got a close tie right now. it's between UPB and Instion. All right. Both of them are what we call closed loop. You send out a command, you get a response back. If you get no response back, something went wrong, and you either issue the command or you say, I can't do anything about it. The X10, I think that's going to go away. It's cheap. And the problem with cheap is that it's unreliable. You know, this stuff works 80% of the time, maybe 90% of the time. If I work really hard at it, I can get it to 95, but I can't depend on it. Right? And if you can't depend on it, my wife walks in and goes, hey, you know that light? It's not working. Why do I have it on home automation if it works every once in a while?
Mm-hmm.
She's the one that keeps me attached to reality here. Except when she gets a control of the remote and I'm in the middle of a debugging session and lights are going on and off and I can't figure out why. Get fun doing that. She must have spent about 15 minutes doing that. I'm going crazy. I was ready to kill her except that I was attached to all the wires that were sitting here, so I couldn't move. So
now, what about using like network attached devices and stuff like that? Have you done any work with that?
Yeah, the stuff that I did from a long time ago was the HSC2, which Steve Ciarcia from Byte Magazine and now from Circuit Seller, he had started this home control system 2, and it used RS-45 as the network. At the time, Ethernet was very expensive. I mean, you were talking about, thick net cables,
right.
Thin net cables. Running that around the house, just not a good idea. Running a single pair of, telephone cable around the house, not a big deal. So you had this little central controller, which was basically a Z80, and it would issue the commands out, and you'd have remote 8051 little processors that would control digital, or they'd read back digital, or they'd control analog. They could send out IR. It was pretty neat stuff. Right. Nowadays, put it on an IP network. You can have it here. You can have it in a building in Vermont. No big deal. As long as you have
most people's like new houses are already wired for Ethernet all over the place, right?
Right, and now you also
a
have wireless.
Them, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you had two separate buildings, it used to be the best thing you could do is don't run copper between the two. You could run fiber,
right?
Because copper was susceptible to lightning strikes.
Mm-hmm.
Seen plenty of those in my day. You don't want equipment on the end of a lightning strike. Very expensive to replace. Now you've got wireless between the two points. As long as you've got line of sight, you get the right antennas. You know, that's pretty reliable. So you've got all sorts of methods now. You've got your, you know, your IP over the internet. You've got, you know, houses with fiber and with copper sitting around the house. You've also got wireless, so you can move around real easy.
Mm-hmm. So, do they have nice. Some good network-enabled devices like that that you can recommend that you've tried?
So far, don't have anything that's cheap. Also, my stuff, you remember the comment about old? Yeah. My network stuff is even older. I've got a Cisco ASM terminal server. It has about 80 serial ports on it. Great as used as a leaf blower. hey, it works. Right now I'm looking into using some microchip chips to interface to things like the PIC and the 8051 processor. The harder part of that is actually writing the TCJSP stack that goes on top of it. Really annoying. That's not something I'm really good at yet.
So, Neil, you live in Pennsylvania, don't you?
Sure.
I live over in New Jersey.
I'm in New Jersey.
Just across
close
the river.
Enough.
Just across the river there. Well,
close
Central
enough.
Park, Jersey. Anyway.
That's probably why you're in the technological funk, just like we are over here in New Jersey, over here in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is what we call it over here.
Yeah, so that means you're not too far away from where those guys live.
Yeah, not too far.
Are you like?
I contacted Neil before and asked him to come and do a presentation at our LUG. We just never got it together. I don't know if he remembers or not.
Yeah, I do. I was wondering if that were you, was you guys or not.
It's me, yep.
Yeah, I'd still like to come one day, but right now, no.
We'll wait until your stuff is working first, right?
That's right. I've got to recover this stuff first. Then maybe we can get the camera, or, you know, we'll put the camera on the one light here and you can watch it going on and off. That's always exciting.
Hey.
That would be cool.
Are you closer to Camden, or are you closer to Phillipsburg?
I'm closer to Phillipsburg. Actually, 8A on the turnpike.
Oh, so you're not too you're not too far from the Lehigh Valley.
Yeah, I'd be I guess 90 minutes.
Where down by Woodbridge, Menlo Park area?
No, further south.
Okay.
Down Monroe Township.
Okay.
I know where that is.
Yeah, I work in New Jersey, and Alan also works in New Jersey. We do the commute every day.
Let's put it this way: I'm only 7 miles from the DeVry campus in New Brunswick.
Okay.
I remember from one of the other shows that you guys have gone there. I had worked as a lab tech up in the one in Woodbridge, or Menlo Park, I thought it was called.
Yeah, it was Menlo Park. I used to go there back in, oh, God, I don't even remember back when.
Holy crap, it was a long time ago, right?
Yeah,
it was a long time ago.
You rode the horse and buggy there, right, Alan?
No, it was
steam engine.
God, it got to be.
He was modern. He had one of those big wheeled bikes.
So how's the book taken off there?
I don't know how well it's selling, but from the folks who have read it so far, I've gotten a lot of people say that they found it be very useful, which I was terrified that, you know, somebody would read this thing and open it up and go, God, this guy's an idiot. What the hell is he talking about? Sort of like the people on the IRC are saying right now. You know? there's one guy who, he went through the Asterisk chapter, and he said that it was fantastic, which I was really shocked. Somebody pulled that out. It was the thing I worked the hardest on. Right? There were other people who were very happy with the Myth chapter, which I'm very pleased about. I've got to go play with that yet. Nobody has said anything about compiling with the wireless stuff that I put together. Mm-hmm. I put in how to put your wireless in, how to use the NDIS wrapper and stuff like that, which required recompiling the kernel. Recompiling the kernel is very difficult to do. I went through and I tried to find the rules for, you know, for the Red Hat and Fedora, which I'm familiar with, and they keep changing them. They better stop that. It's very annoying. Then there's the Debian, which I've never used the Debian packages. Mm-hmm. Right, and here I am trying to explain to somebody how to recompile. I had to go out and find all the notes. And then the older kernels, which basically you just went in and you typed in a bunch of make commands, you know, make bzip, and you got yourself a floppy and you were all set. So I included all these different methods. I explained how to do the make init rd, how to reconfigure your grub and your lilo. So far, nobody said anything about that, and I am worried that if I've made any kind of mistakes in there, somebody's going to get really screwed up.
I'm sure they'll tell you.
Oh, yeah, they'll tell me in no time flat. Now, here, the Gen 2 stuff. I don't like Gen 2. Great, great kernel, and, you know, royal pain to install. It was unbelievable to use, except for its startup stuff. I'm used to Sys5, and I haven't a clue as to where Gen 2 got their stuff from. Mm-hmm. I ran the stuff on a 2-gig disk. I had Mr. House and Asterisk running on that. And that worked real well until one day I needed another disk, and I thought that that was a 40-gig disk and tried to load new Linux on it. And you know the Linux, the Fedora doesn't fit on 2-gig anymore? I
don't
amazed.
Even think Fedora's install fits on 2-gig anymore.
No,
they
doesn't.
They send you 8 CDs now or something like that, right?
It's a DVD now. It's just one big DVD.
Yeah.
It's 4 gig of stuff, and I'm not so sure I like the install. I'm not too happy with many of the distributions. They're all a bit of a pain in some way. Got to be something better.
Getting pretty bulky, I think, a lot of them are.
Yeah. Fedora, the one I'm using right now, which they wanted me to use that one for the book. I was going to go look for something else, but they said, okay, Fedora is one of the most popular. Use it for the book. I said, okay, fine. If I try to take out Evolution, right, which is a package I have no need for, right, it takes out Bind, and it takes out Firefox, and it takes out Glib, and it's like Glibc, and it's like, whoa, guys, you know, you're pulling out everything I need. Why are you doing this?
What you need is a home automation distro.
Really?
That would be an awesome idea.
I may actually do something like that, and if somebody says, talking about Slackware.
Slackware is awesome, yeah. That's
I started with Slackware, right?
Yeah.
You know, 100, 3.5
inch. And the crowd cheers, Slackware, 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 Slackware.
Debian, go with Debian.
I don't know. I still have my 100 floppies I can install off of Slackware. I haven't used it in a while. I don't know what it's like anymore. The Debian,
very
though,
good.
I'm seeing for anything that's embedded, everybody's using the Debian.
Mm-hmm.
So I may end up with a Debian just so that I can use what's already done and I don't have to redo it.
Well, you know, if you go to Slackware route and you get the system built, you could just use the Slacks scripts to build a you know, not only a live CD, but a CD that'll just drop the whole thing onto a system.
Right.
Well, the systems I'm going to most likely try to install on are going to be these little compact flash disks that they've got, you know, like 32 meg.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want a whole lot of stuff sitting on the home automation device. Basically, I want enough of an operating system so that the network stuff comes up. I would like a web server of some type that we can do a little bit of scripting with. And basically, after that, I'm installing the application, which is a relatively simple programming language that accesses either direct I/O, either, you know, something that is off of one of the serial ports, like one of the, you know, one of the Insteon controllers or something, or something that's across the network. Right? I mean, this simplifies everything. I don't want a whole lot of stuff sitting on there. This way, I don't have to worry about hard disks crashing. I don't have to worry about it using a lot of power. I mean, these servers, man, during the summertime here, my computer room was easily reaching 95 degrees. I happen to be the furthest room from the air conditioning unit, so it's a little tough in here. Great way to lose weight.
Yeah, I know how that is.
Dan is very familiar with that.
You can shut the furnace off in the wintertime. You just got the computers going all the time.
Yeah, somebody wanted to donate a 3B5. We were going to put it in the apartment. We wouldn't have to worry about heating it anymore. Don't worry if you don't know what a 3B5 is. It's a very old Unix machine.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like what you're looking to do there is like make some kind of like embedded devices. Are you have the intention of building these things and maybe selling them?
Yeah. Actually, I have thought about it. At the moment, it's a little hard to figure out what I'm going to build since I haven't gotten that far. Originally, I was going to start off with something real simple. Something as simple as the NSLU2, the Linksys device. You take the Insteon with a USB, you plug it in there, you put a compact flash in there, and it would have a simple program that would simply just turn things on and off. Right? Nothing too fancy, no web interface or anything. That would be the start of it. Then I got a little further along and say, okay, well, we really do need some kind of programming language. And trying to install something like Perl or Python, that's a little bit overboard. Right? Because then you have all the libraries that go with it. So that's the part I'm kind of stuck on at the moment, is how I'm going to create this nice little simple-to-use language that says, if this turns on, do this. Or if this does this, go out to the system and use the built-in Unix commands or the Linux commands and issue that command and go out there and do stuff. Right? That's as far as I've gotten on that so far. Currently, I'm using the Mr. House, which it's Perl-based. You know, you need a pretty good server on it, and you can get that's as flexible as I can get with that stuff. You know, you can do anything with Perl. Just can't do it the same way twice. Just use Bash. Somebody there, Kent? Use Bash?
Just use Bash. That's the way to go.
Nah. I like writing in Perl. You know, job guarantee. I don't know Python yet, so I can see some of the guys are posting up stuff there.
You know, I've just started looking at some Python
stuff
myself.
What about Ruby?
It looks pretty nice.
Ruby. Write it in Ruby.
All right. Hey. What about Lisp? And let's see.
TK,
how about we go Logo TCL. And...
PHP. You know, you can use PHP on the command line as well.
Yeah, but I can write it in JavaScript also. At some point, too many languages. I know assembly language. I know C. I know... I'll be careful. I've used Perl. Let's not say that I know Perl. I actually know Shell.
See, the problem is you forgot the one language that rules them all, and that's Mono.
Mono?
You need to write it in .NET.
.NET. .NET is what you get stuck in. I don't think highly of that MS company. I've been doing battle with them since 1978.
That's why I say write it in Mono. Then you can rub it in their faces.
I prefer to write it in a language I can understand. I like C. It looks like
assembly
language.
Why do you pick Perl then?
C sharp.
I know Perl. Okay, I actually am halfway decent with the regular expressions. Although when I get too greedy... things don't work the way I expect them to. We use a lot in the lab. We've got a machine.
In order
running.
To use Perl, you need to have a keyboard that has like 50 sets of extra brackets somewhere.
No. Well, I'm used to using Emacs as an editor, so control sequences are no big deal for me. You know, just typing away, you know, control this, control that, control this. I don't use the GUI that much. That mouse, there's no control key on that mouse.
That's right. Keyboard is a lot faster than a mouse anyway.
Actually, what I discovered, and I learned this from the early Apple. I don't know if this still holds true on the current Apple. I could use the keyboard and the mouse in Apple applications really fast, as long as you could use both at the same time. Mm-hmm. For some reason, when the applications were brought over to the Windows, you know, the Windows machines, I could not do the same thing, or it was just awkward, or something kludgy about it. And it seemed to be the same application. I don't know.
Well, they had to slow it down there a little bit on the Windows side so the machine could catch up.
Why? We keep buying faster machines.
Well, you want those features, don't you?
I don't know. The features, if they work, that's great. But I've got the features at work. I've got leftover machines. My lab does not have a lot of money for doing various things. So you get a lab that throws out an old machine. I take it, I put in a hard disk or, you know, some spare memory that I find from other machines. I throw the Linux on there. I start writing Perl scripts. The Perl scripts go out. They talk to our routers. They talk to our switches. They talk to the various pieces of equipment that I'm testing with, right? And we're talking 386, 486, Pentium 90. Oh, yeah. These things run fast. You put the same code on a Windows machine, right? 2 gigahertz laptop with wireless connection. Why is it by 486 kicking its tush? You know, it's ridiculous.
Because you got to write your code in Visual Basic.
All right, now you're getting insulted. I prefer to write it in Atari Basic. How's that?
Well,
with machine language speed up.
Commodore Basic.
Yeah, there you go, Commodore Basic.
I wasn't a Commodore user. I was an Atari, so we were at odds. They were my enemy.
I used to be a Commodore user, and one of my buddies growing up, he had an Atari BBS that he ran on his Atari 800.
Yeah, one of my friends had the ran Atari BBS out of East Brunswick here. We had a lot of fun playing with that thing. He had these huge 8-inch drives.
Yeah.
Then he had the ATR 8000. I've got one of those around here somewhere. And then he bought a huge hard disk, 10 meg. Oh, yeah. Boy, did we load that thing up with games. Never played the games, just broke the copy protection.
Yeah,
that was
exactly
half the fun.
All right, Neil, so tell me this.
Yeah.
In an ideal situation, say you had, you know, an unlimited supply of really cool computer equipment and money just being thrown at you like you are a rock star.
Okay.
How far could you go with home automation under Linux? What could you really do?
Well, I'd skip voice recognition. All right? Mm-hmm. I think that's a bit silly. People always say, well, I want to talk to the computer and do things. I'll skip that. And the reason being, at 6 o'clock in the morning when you're creeping around the house, you don't want to be talking to the computer. Computer, lights, and coffee. Okay, my wife is going, what the hell are you talking to down there? What's the matter with you? She wants to sleep. I'd like to have it programmed so that it would automatically fill up the coffee machine. The coffee machine would be sitting there. It would know that at a certain time it's going to get, you know, it's going to turn on and it's going to check, is there water in there? Is there coffee in there? Okay, the thing is running. Okay, now it's doing its little stuff. It's making the coffee. It's doing its thing. But that little box is an independent little device on the network. Okay? So the Linux stuff, it's sending out instructions telling it what it's to do and when it's to do it, then going about talking to other things. Now, little IR stuff around the house so that you know when somebody walks in a room, walks out of a room, who's in the room still. Okay? Then lights can go on appropriately at the time. You know, you can walk into the house. It won't know who's doing this stuff, but lights will go on. Various things that you do during the day will do what they're supposed to do, you know. So you got lights, you got your sprinkler system, you've got your telephone system, you've got any appliances that need to be, you know, automated. You'll get notifications when things are going on. You'll be able to monitor your power, how much you're using, keep track of it. And it'll all pop up on these nice little graphs. So you don't have to sit there reading all the data trying to figure it out. Right? All this stuff, you can do this now. And I had had most of the stuff except for the power measurement. I haven't actually put the little devices in my power box yet. So that and the IR. The IR, my wife does not like little wires hanging around the house, so I have to take that a little slower.
What about an alarm clock? Do you have an automated alarm clock? Or do you just use a regular one?
I've got two dogs.
Two dogs.
Oh, yeah, they're great. They're great for waking you up. Actually, what I was thinking about doing for an alarm clock was building an alarm clock that is connected to the network. You never have to set the time because it's going to go out and it's going to get the time. Right? But it also plays either internet radio or it plays your regular radio tuned to the appropriate station that you want it to. Or it can play MP3s or whatever, you know, OGG or something that's sitting on your server. Okay? You can program it so that, you know, you can set odd times. Hey, I'm going to be on vacation. Set the flag for vacation. Alarm clock's not going to go off. know, the devices, the remote devices are intelligent. You know, your server is sitting there. It's got a lot of intelligence. It can do stuff. But if it crashes, everything else can still somewhat run. That's my vision of the home stuff.
Nice. And how much did you have that before your systems went down? I mean, was most of that implemented at your house then?
Or were you... The alarm clock hasn't been implemented yet. I bought the alarm clock. I have an ARM board to put in it, and that was going to do the work. I had Mr. House up and running. I had my weather station on there. I had the X10 controlling various lights around the house. I just purchased a bunch of Insteon stuff to actually put in. I have I have two areas in my house where I have four-way control for the electricity, and I have a few other places where it needs to be four-way. And the Insteon was going to take care of that. It was going to set up the groups and everything so that hit the certain key and the lights would do what they're supposed to do. Let's see, what else? Sprinkler system. Haven't automated the pool yet. We just had the pool repaired, so I didn't want to start fooling around with that. TV shows for the TiVo. I was pulling down a ton of information off the internet, and I was creating graphs and stuff of the weather information that I was getting. There was a bunch of other stuff, and I just can't remember it all at once. I've got the whole thing wired up here. I've got I've got a 100 megabit network sitting here. All right, so that was working real well. Oh, I can SNMP poll all the devices here so I can keep track of my bandwidth, because that's a bit of a problem nowadays. If you go over your bandwidth, you get kicked off the ISP. If I don't have connectivity to the internet, I will go through withdrawal symptoms. Very bad. Very bad.
Holy mackerel.
My wife doesn't like...
What do you have? DSL cable? What do you have over there?
I have a cable modem.
And they really... They're that strict?
I don't want to find out. You keep hearing things about these people, they're going out, they're pulling this down, they're doing that. My web pages are automatically updated. They live on my server at home. I type in changes, and the information gets put into the web page, gets shot up to the internet, to various sites, and it sits up there. The weather station, until just recently, I actually had the weather, you could find out what the weather was out back of my house. I was about to start putting capture of the camera, you know, and send that up to a website. You wouldn't be getting to my website local. Right? Everything would be shoved up to the internet. So I don't need the extra bandwidth, and also I have to be careful of security. It would be a bad thing if somebody broke into my system. I think a few people would be laughing at me. Not a good thing. Whatever happened to CBUS? That's a question we ask every day. Nobody has the answer.
Let me ask you a question here. focusing on Asterisk,
yep.
How much of a challenge did you find Asterisk to be?
There's so much stuff that you can do with it. Just trying to figure out what to do with it is the hard part. Although figuring out a dial plan is a little difficult. After I got the dial plan all straightened out and understood how everything is supposed to work, wasn't that hard? Right. The one trouble I have with right now is that the Linksys ATAs that I've got, the SPA 3100, 3102, it has a problem with software echo. And that problem I haven't been able to overcome. Every once in a while I'm on the phone, it'll start echoing, it gets worse, and then it comes back and it disappears. So that's the only thing I haven't been able to get rid of yet.
Huh.
But extensions and everything else, they work great. In fact, I've got a nice little wireless phone sitting here, and I have a Linksys router here, and I was using the Seesoft software, and it's got a problem where the wireless phone won't go through the wireless properly on that. I got to switch over to not EDWRT, OpenWRT, the software for it.
Uh huh.
So that that's one of the things I'm going to be working on, along with everything else.
Yeah, because, you know, every time we start doing something on our Asterisk servers, it seems like we pull our hair out trying to find the documentation for what we want to do, and then spend, like, an inordinate amount of time trying to implement it.
Right.
And remove it and then implement it again and different things. And it just seems to be like the documentation is fragmented and scattered, and it doesn't keep pace with the changes.
No, it doesn't. That's a little bit on the fad side.
Flat out wrong sometimes too, you know?
Yeah, I ran into that. Some of the software that you find up there is meant for like the Asterisk at home distribution.
Mm-hmm.
And you go and you try the stuff out, and then all of a sudden you realize, you know, half the commands are missing. And then you realize it's a GUI front end that hides the details, and you can't figure out what's going on. Although, while writing my book, I did find the Asterisk book that O'Reilly has.
Right.
And that was a pretty good book. That helped me out on some of the details in the dial plan that drove me nuts. What hardware do you have in your box for the Asterisk?
An old 800 megahertz, Pentium 3, a gig of RAM. Nothing special.
What card are you using? Or are you using an external ATA?
We don't have a card.
It's all SIP.
Yeah, it's all SIP.
No, we do have a... We did get a card, didn't we? Didn't we get
one? Yeah, you have a card in there, but the only thing that does is provide you the timing for your conference room. You're not using it for anything. Same with me. I'm running a 750 megahertz box with 512 megs of RAM. And I once again, everybody's heard this. I think that my Asterisk box is possessed by the devil.
All right. I'm going to make a recommendation. Switch over the device driver for USB. I assume you guys are using 2.6 kernel. If you're running 2.4, you're kind of stuck.
It's running TrixBox, so it's probably running.
That little card that you're putting in there is that modem card that's providing the timing. That thing interrupts at something like 64,000 times per second. Right? So it's pretty nasty. Right? It's causing a lot of interrupts on the box, and the box gets busy. If you do anything on the hard drive, like compiling a kernel, it will start missing interrupts. And with the voice stuff, that's not good. The USB seems to time the stuff better. I've had less problems with that, although you still can't compile a kernel, or if you have too many things hitting the hard disk, like the update that goes on in the middle, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning where it goes out and it finds all your applications and all your files and stuff. That hits the disk pretty hard.
Thanks, beeping.
Yep, somebody's sending out a control G, it looks like.
They were saying on the IRC server they missed my keyboard beeping, so I had to hook them up real quick.
Okay, there. Now they're happy.
So you're saying get that card out of there, replace it with a USB device?
The USB driver. You already have the
USB
device. Yeah. If you're running 2.6, it should help a little. At least that's my opinion. And don't take it as gospel, because Asterisk is not the strongest thing that I do.
Now, which device are you talking about to replace it with the USB?
Inside you've got the Zaptel card.
Right.
All right. That particular card is pretty nasty. The CPU has to go out and pay attention to it to do anything. For some reason, by using the this USB driver, right, it seems to be, the load seems to be less on the box. At least that's what I've found. I don't know if it's true. I may have had an old box that I was running and didn't handle things very well.
So now here's a question: what the hell is wrong with my Asterisk box? Then I don't even have one of those cards in it.
You're running it.
You've got to be
completely. Yeah, it's completely SIP the whole way. Probably what's wrong with it is I'm running TrixBox, right, instead of actually putting a real legitimate quote unquote Asterisk on a distribution on the box.
It may be your network interface. Right. First, this can be a whole bunch of things. Okay, this is where things get to be real fun. PCI, you know that we've got an infinite number of interrupts on the thing now. We've up to 255 interrupts. If you use the new, was it ACPM or one of those drivers? Which one was it? Is it LS mod? Dang, I hate this. I've got to remember all this stuff. There's a lot of stuff to remember. All right. Where are those stupid drivers? Oh, I can't even remember it now. Anyways, if you've got your Ethernet card that's sharing an interrupt with something else and you're not using the more advanced interrupt control, right? I think it's something like APIC or something like that.
Right.
Right. What ends up happening is the Linux kernel doesn't know which one caused the interrupt, so it's got to get busy. And it goes, did you do it? And they'll say no, and then he'll say, you go to the next device, and when he gets to the device that actually sent the interrupt, he then processes. All right. With the advanced interrupt control, there's something that's sent out, and it says, okay, this guy sent it. You don't have to worry about that. They're sharing interrupts. You know, everything is taken care of. Right. That was one of the things that I ran into a while ago. It's very nasty. Right. The other thing can be that you may need to tune your Ethernet so that you've got more memory dedicated to the receiving and sending of packets. Right. If you run out of memory, you're going to slow down sending stuff out and receiving stuff. You can't handle anything else, so you ignore it for the moment, or you may even drop it. We set up something at work where we adjusted that, and we were able to double our throughput on the box. It was a 550 megahertz box, but extra memory. We had 4 gig of RAM in it, so that worked out rather well for us. Also, the fact that it was a gigabit Ethernet interface meant we could accept a lot more traffic simultaneously. So that may have helped us. It's just a little bit of a difference.
So what distribution are you using as your base for all of your interesting projects that you have going on over there?
Right now I'm using Fedora only because I'm used to System 5 init. It's it's convenient enough that I can use it. I can download it and I can burn it. I have no trouble with it. The Debian stuff I'm not used to. I'm just not used to all the extra commands that go with it. I won't say one is better than the other. As I described, I tried to pull out Evolution, and you pull out Evolution, and everything comes out with it. I don't know if the same thing happens under Debian. I don't know if the same thing occurs under Slackware. Right? I don't care what the graphics look like on my boxes. To be honest with you, I don't want to see my boxes. Right? Mm-hmm. This stuff is supposed to be automated. I don't have to interface to it. And that's the way I want it. I've got Audrey's, the 3Com Audrey's. You put one in the living room, that's where I get my caller ID information. Who's calling? Oh, caller ID information is up on the Audrey. Fine, I don't care. I don't want to talk to them. I don't need to go down the Linux box and look on the screen to find out what's going on. I've programmed in all these macros so that, at dinner time, the telephone system doesn't ring the local phones. They all go to, the answering machines. Everything is programmed in. And it's not necessarily that I do certain things at certain times, right, which was originally the way I had programmed everything on my box, that at such and such a time I was eating dinner, right, at such and such a time I was doing this. My life has gotten to be such that it's not that predictable anymore. So, I had to change some of the stuff. Now, when certain lights and stuff go on, my box knows. In fact, that was one of the nice things about the Insteon. I'm assuming that UPB also has this. If you go into a room and you turn on a light, the Insteon device knows, hey, somebody just flicked the switch. Somebody wants that light on. I'm going to flick it, and I'm going to send a message over to the server saying, hey, somebody turned the light on. So if you do that, the server will now say, hey, it's this time of day. They're turning the lights on. It's dark enough. Everybody, let's turn on the rest of the lights. You can do certain things in that method. You got to be careful, though. Hmm. We'll see what else is in the book.
You know, speaking of the book for a second there, the book title is, I had it up here, the Linux Smart Homes for Dummies. And
yep.
Now, I usually equate, you know, the Dummies books with someone who's never done this before, pick this up and learn how to do it. How accurate do you think that is for your book? Is this something that, you know, just any Joe user who has some familiarity with computers could pick up and actually implement in a relatively short period of time without having to learn the intricacies of Linux?
Well, unfortunately, your average Windows user who's just a user is not going to be able to do this. All right, because it's going to require, they had to learn a little bit about the Linux. Right? They have to be able to log in. They have to be able to bring up a terminal shell. They have to understand how to become root, or at least be able to, you know, have sudo set up properly. Because there are some places in here where I say, okay, look, don't want you to be root. Learn to use the sudo command. You know, and here's a bunch of commands. Then there's the recompiling of the kernel. Let's skip sudo. You've got to be root for this. You know, there are little things that they've got to learn. Okay, how to download a package. I explain to them how to, you know, they bring up their browser, they download the package. I explain to them how to use the tar command. So some knowledge of Linux is important. They have to have a favorite editor. Right? I didn't even want to mention in the book which editor to use. Could you imagine me telling somebody, oh, use Emacs, it's my favorite editor? Boy, oh boy, people be throwing books at me.
They would, because you're wrong. You should use Vi instead.
Yeah, there we go, Vi, you know, mode and... I don't know, I was always one to be using the control sequence keys. My first keyboard didn't have an enter key on it. It had the control key, where the shift key was. Don't know why they switched that. That was the kind of keyboard. You know, you want a line ending? Control M, Control J, Tab, Control I, Backspace, Control H. You know, hit that bell, Control G. That was the way I was used to doing things. Uh-oh, somebody likes Nano. What is Nano?
I'm surprised someone hasn't complained about Pico yet.
Midnight Commander. I don't know. These people should all be using X. E-X.
Sed. That's all you'll ever need is Sed.
I just wave magnets over the hard drive.
Now, we had a bulk eraser for the hard drive. You could pick up the hard drive with one of those things. Especially nowadays, my God. Yeah, the book was written with the idea that somebody was basically familiar with Linux. I was not going to just drop it in and say, oh, here, to untar the file and not explain how to do that. Okay? At some points, the editors actually made me explain how to open a shell. And I found that really, really annoying. At some point, I eventually said, look, I'm wasting time in these chapters explaining how to do these little things, like go up here, click on the icon, you know, here's your shell, now type in this, you know, that kind of stuff. I said, okay, let's skip those little nitty-gritty things and say, okay, you've had to read Linux for Dummies, right? Which is actually a pretty good book. Right? But, you know, you've had to have some, you know, background, a little bit of background. But you don't have to be, you know, the guy who was doing the kernel compiles before doing this. I explain how to do that now. So now we're going to have a bunch of noobs using kernel compile, and I'm going to get a lot of nasty email as soon as they get their boxes back up and running.
So then what you're saying is somewhere, like, I don't know, maybe it says in the book that, you know, if you are completely new to Linux or never used it before, you should probably read the Linux for Dummies book.
Yeah, let's see what I've got here. I wrote that in here somewhere. I tried to be cautious. Let me give you an idea. In one of the chapters here, the editor thought it was a real good idea to explain routing to folks. They wanted me to explain OSPF. I had to explain to them that, you know, OSPF, you've got separate books written for that. You don't want to explain to new people, you know, you don't want to explain to people, this is OSPF. It's a link state protocol. You have to select areas, you know, and all that stuff. Although I did throw that in as an example of how to do things, but I warned people, this chapter is not for getting your CCIE. Neither is it, you know, a beginner's chapter. You don't want to jump into the middle of it. Okay. Got a whole bunch of stuff we build. Geek toys. Always good. Toys, good. Foolish assumptions. There we go. Know a little bit about the Linux OS, the distribution that you have installed, and the version of the Linux kernel. I do explain the information coming out of the Linux kernel. That was very hard to find. Okay, there are many distributions. You got Fedora, Debian, Red Hat, SUSE, Ubuntu. I think I spelled that wrong. Ooh, bad. I gotta correct that. Whoops. I'm going to get a bunch of email from Ubuntu people. Hate mail. Slackware. Let's see. You gotta know whether you got a 2.4 or 2.6 kernel. You've got to install development and tools. You have to log in as a normal user, as the root user. You know, if you're using the XGU, you have to know how to bring up your terminal session. If you're at the login console, well, there's no X. All right? Those people generally are not afraid of the command line at that point. I do try to explain. I actually tried to explain regular expressions to some folks. Whew. That one's going to be interesting. But so far, no one's complained about it. So, you have to have your favorite editor. You're willing to purchase some hardware, because unfortunately, I can't give you everything free, folks. Sorry about that.
So you don't get a hardware? You don't get the system with the book?
Nope. Sorry, guys. X10 wasn't given a discount today, you know? Actually, they'll give you a discount, but you've got to put up with a lot of spam mail. They send out tons of it. My Google account, I think I've got, in the last month, I think I had like 40, 50 pieces of mail from X10. Once a day at least, sometimes twice. Really annoying. So, you know, basic knowledge. For instance, you have to know how to stick the CD or the DVD into the drive. I'm not going to explain it to you. You got to remove that coffee cup. It's your problem.
So what made you decide to release this book, or to release this under a dummy's title, as opposed to, like, some other title, I don't know, No Starch Press or something like that?
At the time, I was going to be the technical editor. Somebody else was going to write this book. Right? And they had a whole bunch of stuff in there, including voice recognition and stuff like that. I was just going to be the technical editor. Okay? The Wiley folks had come to me and said, you know, we're going to have somebody write this. We want you to be the technical editor because you seem to know a lot about Linux and home automation. I said, okay, no problem. No big deal. Halfway through doing this, I think they started this over 3 years ago. Halfway through, the guy who was going to write the book, he lost his job. He had to go out and look for a job. So they come to me and said, do you know anyone else who can write the book, or do you want to write the book? And I kind of said, well, I've never written a book before. And they said, no problem. We'll explain. We'll help you through it. They said, we need you to have it done in 3 months. I said, I can't do it in 3 months. It'll take me a year. So for 3 months, they argued with me. We started writing it. A year later, the book was done. Honestly, hadn't a clue as to how to do this stuff. When I got done, I thought this was the only way to do books. Now, Bruce Prenn heard that that I had written the book and I had made some comments about, you know, open source book. I really would have loved to done an O'Reilly book. Okay, I mean, that's like the ultimate geek status. I've written for O'Reilly. Right? I've got an animal. It's mine. Right? That would have been great. But they didn't ask. Wiley didn't. I thought that was sort of the way things were done. Bruce Prenn explained, no, you could have worked for, I think it's No Starch Press, but I'm not. No, Prentice Hall. They have books which are related, open to me, released under a Creative Commons license. He explained the process to me and says, if I've ever interested in writing another book, that I should go talk to him and then release it under the Creative Commons, which that would have been much nicer, considering, you know, this is the open source community, and, you know, a lot of this stuff I pulled together from various places and from experience that I have. It would have been kind of nice to be able to give back a little bit more.
Right, and you can do a lot worse than using Prentice Hall as your publishers too. They are a good friend of ours, and hook us up, you know.
Yeah, and then speaking of your downloaded.
Right, and speaking of your publisher, you know, I spent I spent the better part of this, or the better part of the early part of this week, trying to get a hold of a copy of your book and can't find it anywhere. Like, they, all the major bookstores can get it and order it.
Or you can get it from Amazon.com or something like
right,
that.
Right, but the only thing was I wanted to really to look through it before we interviewed you. The earliest I could get it was like Friday, so.
Yeah.
That's the bummer part.
We don't expect that this was going to be a large market, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's face it. Linux home automation, Linux, right? It's a small percentage of the overall market, mm-hmm. right? As compared to all the other books. You know, you got your Windows, where the Windows users, they really need those books, folks. They have no other place to get them. They got to buy the books. At least for Linux, we go up online, we find out the information, we can ask folks. You know, we've got all of that. The home automation part of it, now you're going to take the Linux folks and you're going to take a tiny fraction of that. So what they did was they released one copy to all the bookstores. And I don't know how my friend did it, but he managed to get a copy of his book before I got my books delivered to my house. I still haven't figured out how he did that. Got to remember that next time I need something early, though. So the bookstores tend to have one copy. I was told some folks went looking around here to, you know, my local stores. They went and they checked out the local stores, and one had a copy. They bought it. They went to another place. They had a copy. I haven't bothered to check. I got a copy of my book. I don't need to look at it.
Well, that's a great honor, though, to have something like that that you actually written. And something really cool like that, too.
Yeah, well, I was actually pleased with it after the folks started telling me what they thought about it. Right? Some of the folks, I'm forgetting who it is now. Linux. The one person who reviewed the book, he said it was good except for these small things. I got an honest opinion. He said, "Okay, I like this. I didn't like that. Cool. At least I know where he stands on it." Somebody says the book sucks. I can't take that at, you know, what good is that? It doesn't tell me there's anything wrong. You tell me the book sucks, and because of this, fine. At least then I know where I stood. Right. A lot of folks have picked out chapters that they've liked. That's cool. I found one nice, real big mistake in here, and I'm surprised my network buddies haven't started busting me on it. I put in a diagram, and I had rushed putting it in, and the IP address of every device in the network is the same.
Yeah, I was going to comment that based upon looking at the table of contents, so it's good that you brought that up now. Like,
it's on page 40, and I apologize. They're not supposed to be the same. You can't run a network that way unless you run a lot of NAT. I don't think I run NAT on my printers, though.
You know, what I do want to applaud you on, and of course, I don't have a copy of the book, but I'm just looking at...
I'm disappointed.
Yeah. looking at the table of contents, is I don't see any chapter on here on how to install Linux, and thank goodness for that.
Hey, it was expected. They had Linux beforehand. I wasn't going to explain how to install Linux.
I know, but it just seems like every, like, basic kind of introductory book or, you know, basic book on Linux, and maybe I'm lumping the Dummies books into this too, and erroneously, but they always seem to have like two or three chapters on installing on Linux, or you know, you go out and buy a book on MySQL or something, and the same thing. It's like the first three chapters are about how to get and install MySQL on three or four different operating systems. It's like, you know, maybe in like the first book, but not in every single, you know, book thereafter do we need to have it described.
The funny thing about this book is that when we originally started out, we had 23 chapters. Like right now, there's 20 chapters in an appendix now. Three chapters had to be pulled out. We actually had way too much information in the book. We had to go in, we had to pull out a lot of information. We had to pull out the chapter on integrating Mr. House and Asterisk together. We had to pull out the chapter on Mr. House and Lurk, which is the Linux IR controller. I had to take those out. And then I had to go into all the other chapters that I had written and actually trim out as much as we could So that there isn't a lot of stuff in here. The one thing that the guy complained about was that there was wasn't a lot of information about these little things, but that you could go out to the websites and do it. That's the stuff we had to pull out. I really would have liked to have kept it, but now we would have had about a 500-page book. It'd be a little tough to sell at $19.95 or $14.95 is what my current discount. I'm a can of beans. Lovely. Let me see. Canada. Boy, this place, the books are more expensive in Canada. And the UK. I have no idea what pounds are right now.
Well, Neil, I want to thank you for coming on and talking about all this stuff, and I hope that people do go out and purchase your book, because it sounds like, you know, the first place to go for a collection of all this information on getting you up and running, to get your foot in the door of Linux home automation.
Absolutely. And we'd also like to, like to have you back on the show sometime after you get your server back and running again and everything's going. See how things
Yeah, that'd
going.
Be great. We get the two asteroid systems to talk to each other.
There you go. Now we're talking.
Yeah, that was, you know, and by all means, we're not kicking you out of here, Neil.
I just realized it's 10 o'clock. I didn't realize it was that late.
Yeah, we're not.
I talk a lot.
Yeah, we're not saying you got to go. We're probably going to go on to some other topics, too, and you're more than welcome to stay.
Right now, I've got to take care of. I got to walk the dogs. So, unfortunately,
can't you automate that?
Now to stop. I had three dogs, a Siberian Husky, and you don't try to automate a Siberian Husky because no matter what, he's going to pull whatever you connect to him. He's going to drag it around.
You connect the other two dogs to him. That's what you do.
So they'll follow. They're smart enough that he goes in one direction, they go in the same direction. You know, tie him to a bumper of a car, and he's going to be dragging the bumper around.
Yep.
So, yeah, can't quite get that automated yet. We were thinking about little electric lines overhead, but neighbors, you know.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And definitely, we do want to catch up with you in the future.
No problem. I'll be around.
Because, we already have people in the IRC commenting on how wonderful you are. And how informative, so we'll definitely...
I'm a good bullshit artist. I got a book that tells me that.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to have you come back on. So thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.
And all right, thanks,
take Neil.
Take
care.
Right, bye, thank guys. You.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You know what? I was under a mistaken impression that he was on a previous episode.
No.
Did we talk about having him on a long time ago?
We talked about it, and I wanted to get him to come and do some demonstrations and presentations to the lug over here, too. It just never happened.
Hey Dan, I'm going to play with the volume a little bit over here.
I'm glad that we did get a hold of him this time.
Wait, what are you doing, Alan?
Can you even hear us?
Yes.
Like we're barely... Okay.
I hear you fine. There has not been a hiccup. At all, not like Skype was.
You know, I'm actually wondering, using that X-Lite, I'm wondering if there's like a
noise blanker over here every now and then, but
yeah,
as
wondering
long
if there's
as
like
got
a noise
there,
blanker in there,
good.
Because every once in a while when it got really low, it cut completely out.
That might be.
And I'm just wondering if X-Lite has a noise reduction or something.
Yeah. I'm using SJ phone, so.
Yeah, well, I just fired this up just before we all got together, so.
I don't want excuses, I want results.
Exactly. Yeah, well, eventually the phone will work, and then we won't have to worry about the computers.
Wait a minute. The phone is? Wasn't your phone working today?
No, the phone is working, but I want to get it hooked. I want to get it patched into the board.
Oh.
So I don't have to use the computer on this.
Oh, well, there you go. See, we don't...
I haven't had time to do that yet.
We don't need to do... We don't even need to all be in the same places anymore to do the show. We got these... the hotline here right into the tech show.
That's right.
I'm curious to see how that holds up with, you know, the stream going out, all four of us on separately, and like one or two guests on a phone. That's what I want to see.
Well, my only thing, I guess, one or two guests on the phone, the only problem I can see with that is, what is our limitation through BroadVoice? How many people can we have coming in through the...
But it doesn't, that really doesn't matter. You can get two people in, you can sneak two people in through BroadVoice, but the rest of the extensions, the local extensions for Pat and Alan and I are not going through Broad Voice. They're going directly through the internet to the Asterisk box.
No, no, I'm aware of that, but I thought we were limited to one.
I think it's two.
Oh, okay. We can have two. Oh, there we go. We can have another a humongous guest episode. And you know what? It shouldn't be hard now for other people to use a soft phone into the system. We just give them an account. They should...
Now that we got it hooked up right?
Yeah, now that's all the bugs. Well, most of the bugs have been working out. And speaking of that, you know, last night, holy moly. But we spent the better part of, you know, the week trying to get Alan and Pat connected in here, and it turns out it was something on the Asterisk side we had to configure for NAT traversal on here. And then last night, you know, we're sitting there on a little chat session there in the conference, and, you know, Link is like, we need to, you know, connect his Asterisk directly to mine, so he just dials my extension, and I just dial his. And
right.
We got it working like halfway. And, well, first we had to dig around for this information, and that was a pain in the butt to find. And then we got it. What is it we ultimately settled on? Hold on. Let me bring up that URL because I bookmarked it. It was a URL called the actual documentation was Tricks Box Without Tears, and this looks like a phenomenal guide. This will have to go definitely into the wiki. I'm posting it into the chat right now, and we use that to do the connection between the two systems. And the bugger of it
the
was
address. Dumb me.
Yeah, the bugger of it was we spent what, at least 2 hours fiddling around with this thing, and it was only working one way.
Right.
And then just went in and deleted everything and recreated it all, and then it was working perfectly both ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what the heck? Same information, same configuration. Just, you know, the first time, no good. The second time, worked right off the bat.
So if people want to call the main number and leave us, like, dirty messages, they can.
Well, you can leave Pat dirty messages. I particularly don't want to hear your dirty
That's
messages.
Fine. That's fine, because Dan's got my extension wrong on the announcement, so.
I do?
Yeah.
What announcement? When they first dial in?
No, when you say, if you want to leave a message for the host, that part.
No, I didn't even remember recording that.
You're 101.
Oh, what did I say you were, Pat? 103?
100, you said I am.
Oh. Huh.
That's the main extension, right? 100.
I'll have to re-record that now. Yeah, I think that is the main extension. The main.
No, seriously, though, if you guys want to, like, leave voicemail messages, you can.
Yeah, so it's, yeah, we definitely need to write this stuff down. Somewhere, because when a system blows up and we need to recreate it, don't want to go through pulling our hair out. You know, but the next time it's not going to take a week to get it fixed. It'll take like a few hours until we scratch our heads remembering. But if we wrote it all down, backed up the configs, that'd be no problem.
You mean like me writing it down on my weblog today?
Yes.
Yeah.
You want to write something down?
And speaking of the weblog, you know, let's also talk about the wiki.
Wiki.
You could take that away there, Link.
Yeah, well,
go get a drink.
I believe it was Joel Gorkon who was mentioning that we ought to have a wiki to put interesting facts and stuff like that down, and the listeners can put stuff in there. And, so Dan and I were playing around with some different wikis, and I set one up real quick on the website, and there you have it. We have a running wiki now using PMWiki, if any of you are particular to any kind of software. That one was really easy to set up. So you can head right over to the website and hit the wiki. It's in the menu list on the left-hand side. Or you can just go to tllts.org/wiki, and you'll get right in. You can read whatever's there. If you want to post, you will need to put a password in. The password is no spammers. And the reason we did that is because, you know, we don't want spammers.
Now,
and if we get there, we're going to change it and just not tell anybody.
Right. How often are the backups done so that in case someone goes in there and destroys it?
You know what? I really don't even know. I think it's backed up incrementally, nightly, or weekly, one of the two. But the wiki itself has a versioning system that we're supposed to be able to go in and just set things back if someone changed it. So
everyone's welcome to go on there, go in, make some changes, update your own stuff.
Especially if you're a spammer.
Put some cool stuff in there. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Good tech show stories, stuff like that. Go for it.
We need penis patches.
Gorkon went in there yesterday, and he did a lot of work in there, put some real cool stuff in there. So by all means, go right ahead and build off of his stuff and like to see what you guys put in there. Be real interesting.
Put videos in there and, anything that'll consume so much bandwidth.
I didn't allow uploads.
Kind of like when you had the picture stand where everybody could put up pictures.
Yeah.
And that went downhill real quick.
Yeah.
Well, it's because people forgot about it. It's still there.
Horrible.
Yeah, it's still there. It's just there's no domain name attached to it. You got to go to IP address. That was... Yeah, and you know what? Speaking of website updates, I finally moved the Linux link over to a database, dynamic backend and everything, because it was getting to be a pain in the butt doing that all static and crap. So I went through there, and now I just need to go and flip a switch if the show's dead, or easily add a show through a form now instead
awesome.
Of all that other crap. And speaking of that, there is a new show that I added this week. Let me say what that is. It's called it's a new podcast called The Lip Linux Install Podcast. Let me pull up my notes here on that.
Mike will be into that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A fellow named Serge, S-E-R-G-E, has a new podcast. He talks about installing different Linux distributions, and he goes through the install process and I guess comments. I haven't listened to the episode yet. I just downloaded them all the other day, so it's good to have that, another one joining the family.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure on the GNOME and the KDE radio podcasts. I'm not sure if they're still active or they plan to be, because they haven't released an episode in a couple months. I haven't relegated them to the dead yet, but...
I found some other podcasts. It was called the Linux Hillbilly Podcast, and they only did a couple episodes, and they stopped doing it. And also, the DistroWatch podcast, I don't think he's in production anymore, that guy.
No, DistroWatch isn't running anymore.
The first guy did it for a while, and then the second guy picked it up, and he only did like two or three episodes, and then he kind of dropped it. He hasn't done it in about a month, I guess.
Yeah, that's another one I was wondering whether to relegate to the graveyard. Or just, leave it up there. Maybe it'll come back.
Yeah, leave it for a bit.
But the list keeps growing, and that's good. That is good.
And Security Monkey hasn't come out with a new episode in a long time.
Yeah.
I'll have to get on him about that.
I'll just dump his ass into the graveyard, too.
I think he's on vacation right now. I think that's what the problem is. He's on
vacation? Man, he hasn't put one out in like 4 months.
He takes very long vacations.
Yeah. No, it's a very long vacation combined with his new girlfriend interest.
Man, I've been listening to BSD Talk a lot, too.
The man has proper priorities, man.
BSD Talk's pretty darn good.
Yeah, yeah. He has some decent guests on there. The best one that I like from that was when he had the NVIDIA guys on.
Oh, and System Trash is now gone.
That's done?
Yeah, they did a final one. According to what I read off the blog and everything, I don't even think I got the final one, where I'm not sure where it is, but I think they packed it in, unfortunately.
Hey, man, it takes dedication to do a show every week,
Or every other week, or monthly.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah. But all the other ones are still going.
Nope.
Still going.
Have you guys downloaded Ice Weasel?
Heard of it.
I'm not running Debian.
That's right. A little silly if you ask me.
Well, you know...
What would it be, actually?
What would what be?
Because I've never heard of it.
iTweezle?
Well, yeah. Here's the deal with that for people who like Alan, have their head in the sand. What has happened
better
was...
Better than my ass.
Yeah, or off Linksys. What has happened was the Mozilla Foundation approached Debian and said that you cannot... And I guess they're doing this to other distributions, too, is according to their trademark, you're not allowed to use... If you're going to use the Mozilla name or the Firefox name or Thunderbird name, you must also use the Mozilla, Thunderbird, or respective icons and graphics set and use the name. So the name has to be tied with the graphics. You can't take the Mozilla name and use a customized icon with it, which is what I believe a lot of distributions were doing, because the Mozilla public, the Mozilla Foundation's, their trademark requirements specifically say if you're using the Mozilla or any of the proper code, you must use the properly identified icon or graphics. And there's rules and restrictions for being able to use the Firefox logo, the Mozilla logo, the Thunderbird logo. And according to the Debian folks, they say that that is a violation of I forget exactly which right, but I think it's the third right or whatever it is, the right to modify it and then redistribute it. They say that violates the GPL, and thus they can't include those icons and graphics set in with the Mozilla, Firefox, and Thunderbird software. And so what they had to do was, in order to stay compliant with Mozilla's license and at the same time with the GPL, they, in a sense, kind of forked it and are using their own icon set and calling it IceWeasel now. And you know, what is it? I'm not sure what the Thunderbird one is. What is it, Icebird or something, or whatever.
Okay.
But it comes down to, it's an issue with regards to, you know, copyright and trademark, two different categories here, which, you know, shouldn't really affect one another, but they actually kind of do in this case. And a lot of people are saying, well, this is just nitpicky and it's ridiculous, and, you know, the Debian crew is being outrageous, and the Mozilla Foundation is getting to be too controlling. And, you know, both sides make, I think, a valid point. I mean, Mozilla Foundation has to protect its trademark. Otherwise, you know, because they're a business, there's a quality associated with their name, and in the past it's been shown that if an entity doesn't protect its trademark, that it can cause problems for that entity.
Sure.
Should a competitor, you know, start doing nefarious things with their trademark and stuff like that. You know, it'd be just like, you know, if they weren't enforcing their trademark, Microsoft could come in and take the Firefox logo and slap it over top of Internet Explorer, and everybody can be like, well, I don't understand why everybody's praising Firefox, because it runs just like Internet Explorer over here, when little do they know that's exactly what it is. But, you know, on the other side, the Debian folks are like, you know, we're trying to stick with the GPL here, and you know, you are, it's a violation of the GPL. And to not be able to modify.
That's where I disagree. I don't think that it is a violation of the GPL, because copyright and trademark are two wildly dissimilar things, and the GPL is concerned with copyright. I think the Debian folks are being a bunch of whiny little bastards, and you know, they're just playing that whole elitist thing again. I thought that they had gotten away from that a little bit, you know, in the past couple of years, and I've been digging that whole thing that, you know, they let you actually get some software that runs on their system now, like, you know, Pine and stuff like that, which you used to have to jump through hoops to get, right? And now they're pulling this whole fork of Firefox and Thunderbird thing out of their ass, and I think it's just ridiculous, you know what I mean? The only thing that Mozilla is asking is that they use the logo with the software the way that it's supposed to be used. And, yeah, I don't see what the problem is. You know, and like I said, this is not a violation of the GPL because it's a trademark issue. It's not a copyright issue.
And it is a pretty logo.
And it's a nice looking logo. Why the hell can't they just use it?
Well, this is in this instance, it kind of does violate the GPL because the trademark specifically says you cannot alter the logo in any way, and that if you are going to distribute this software in any form using the Mozilla name, you must distribute with the Mozilla icon set or the Firefox icon set.
Right, but the GPL deals with code, and we're talking about a fucking icon, graphic.
But you should
be
able.
They don't mix. There's a huge crevasse there that they're trying to make an issue out of, you know? And it really is not a problem.
At the end of the day, you have
but
to
you
say there are more important issues to deal with.
Right.
You can't distribute the code, the Firefox or Mozilla code, in that manner with the restriction that you can't change the icon and still be compliant with the GPL. Because now, if you change the icon, then you must change the name. And if you change the name, you must also change the code to reflect the name change, which could, you know, which you're going to have to go through and change the name inside the source code. So therefore, now you forked it in order to stay compliant with the GPL. Whereas the GPL would say that, well, you know, if you took the software and you released it with your own icon.
You're under the assumption here that the GPL states that you can only use GPL software with GPL. And it doesn't say that. You can use any fucking software you want to use. You know, they're just being picky. There's no problem with them including Firefox with Debian and them using the logo with it. The only problem is they don't want to. Nobody in Mozilla said you cannot have Firefox. All they want is for them to use the right icon.
Right.
You know, and they didn't say you can't modify Firefox.
Exactly.
You know,
it's
not a question of can you modify it or change the name. Yeah, you can modify it, you can change the name, whatever the hell you want. They're not saying you can't do that. They just said if you have it there and you call it Firefox, we want you to use this logo.
But from what I have read, they have said that if you're going to modify and distribute the application with the Mozilla name and the Mozilla icon set, you must have those modifications approved. And I have a couple of links to some
apparently
articles that
not,
talk about that.
Apparently not, because Debian's making a fork of it without getting any approval.
But they're not. But they're making a fork of it and not using the Mozilla trademark in there. So then they
right because they're not calling it Firefox.
Right, but if
you
they're
know,
going
I mean,
to...
this is the whole gist of the problem. Debian does not need to make any changes to Firefox. It works just fine. The Mozilla code works fine on every damn distribution, including Debian. They don't need to change it. The reason they want to change it is because it does not meet their GPL standards.
Well, the GPL doesn't address trademarks.
No, it doesn't. So that's not a problem there. The problem is that Debian does not want to use it because, and it's there because that's the issue. It has nothing to do with Firefox or Mozilla at all. They're being wildly cooperative with this. It's not a problem with them. It's a Debian issue. They just don't want to use it because it doesn't meet their whatever standard it is that they have. And my whole point is that it's a bullshit standard. There's no reason for them not to use this code because they use stuff like Pine. I can get Pine on Debian now. I don't hear them bitching about that anymore, and that's not GPL code at all.
But that's not under the free. That's under the non-free.
Right. Well, why not put Firefox
under
the non-free?
That's been a proposed solution, is to put it under the non-free. That I've
I mean,
heard.
Could,
I don't know why they don't. You know,
I'm
not
still,
sure why they don't.
What
do
I
that.
Don't understand is why they have to perpetuate this whole non-free thing. Like Mozilla is not going to stop anybody from using their browser. They want everybody to
absolutely.
Use it. You know?
Done every other
the Firefox Foundation wants you to use the browser. They're not going to care if you put it on a system and you know it's not labeled as a non-free kind of thing. It's just a battle and an argument of semantics, I think.
Well,
a lot of wasted anyway, that's effort. My take on
I
it.
I think
anyway.
It's a wasted effort, man, really.
Yeah, I think it's they're wasting their breath, and all it's going to do is fork off a project that I think is really going good, and they ought to leave it alone. But, you know, maybe I'm just talking crap, and they're going to do something good with it, too. I don't know. I see it as, it's a wasted effort. They could do something much better with the effort they're going to use to redo Firefox so that they have a different icon. You know, they could take all of that wasted effort and put it somewhere else where it would be more appreciated, like, you know, I don't know, updating some of their packages or something like that, you know?
Speaking of forks, you heard about Compiz and Beryl?
No, what's up with that?
Compiz, there's a project that forked off Compiz. It's called Beryl. Apparently some of the developers don't like the fact that, you know, the main one guy from Novell is, you know, pretty much in charge of all the coding and approvals of, you know, of patches and improvements into the source code. So they basically forked off Compiz and using their own thing, you know. So it's split now. It's going to be curious to see who uses what now.
Wait, why did they split it again?
They thought that the one guy who was doing the development, Dave Reeveman from Novell, they thought that he was being too conservative with applying patches and new pieces of code into it. So they basically forked it off, and they're throwing everything into the bucket pretty much. You know, they want to do a faster development is what they say.
Who's they?
This one person, I forget her name, a woman. Few of the other developers that are working on it.
So how's that going to relate to the rest of the project? I mean, is it a significant fork? I mean, is it like, because I see like the XGL stuff and Compiz stuff. I think, doesn't Novell have a lot of stake in that, and they're putting a lot of development towards it? So if you fork it, are you still, I mean, is Novell still staying with the original? And all
The main guy is Dave Riven. He's a Novell employee.
Right.
Yeah, the other person is Quinn Storm, who's the other developer who is not from Novell. She was the one who was pushing for the fork.
I guess we'll have to see what happens.
I haven't looked at Beryl at all, to be honest. So I'm not that familiar with it. I saw a video of it, and it looked pretty much like, you know, Compiz. It didn't look that much different.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, and I know we've had a couple of different people come on and talk about it, but it'd be interesting to, you know, to sit down and really look at, you know, look at this fork now, and also XGL versus AIGLX, and, you know, where's it all going to go? Is it all going to come together? Are we going to have two competing formats here, and, you know, which one, is one going to end up winning out over the other? And how compatible are they between each other? And is this going to mean it's more difficult for somebody to write software that takes advantage of either system? Know what I'm saying?
I hear you, man.
No comment from you, Link?
We feel you and understand your position fully.
Yes, so... Boy, I'm glad you understand it because I'm still
Link
confused.
Feels your pain.
I would like to, you know, if I would like to have more information on that. I would like to have somebody give me more information instead of me digging around and finding myself. Because, you know, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but I was kind of under the impression that, what was it, Novell was pushing the XGL. Was it Red Hat that was AIGLX?
Yeah.
And was AIGLX more geared towards the ATI cards?
Not sure. I haven't run it.
Maybe I might be mistaken on that. I thought, because I know, like, XGL is really works well with the NVIDIA cards, and I've heard it's a little kludgy with the ATI cards. But for some reason, somewhere along the line, I picked up, and I might be wrong about this, that the AIGLX was... you know, working better on the ATI cards, and NVIDIA was a little behind on the AIGLX stuff. But, you know, what do I know? I'll just have to ask T. He'll fill me in on all that.
Yeah, he's saying that AIGLX was being pushed by the XORC people.
Okay, maybe that's the case. Who knows? Now all we need to have is Mandriva come out with their own. Or Slack GL. That's what we need. we'll talk to Pat about that. Slack GL.
Hey, are you guys familiar with the OpenWRT replacement firmware? It runs on some Linksys switches, firewalls.
The OpenWRT project, yeah.
Have you tried it?
I don't have one of those routers to begin with, so no, I haven't tried it.
Well, mine is covered under it, so I'm curious to see what people have to say about it. I mean, besides the fact that you can boost up the signal strength on the antenna, what are the other advantages to it? I know people are talking about running Asterisk right on the router.
Supposedly. Really?
Yeah.
Now, that would be fun.
And there's a whole bunch of other...
There was a couple of TWAT episodes about that. And as a matter of fact, I don't know if you were there, Link, when the guys from the 2600 Club showed up at a LUG meeting, and they were working on writing firmware and everything for the WRT and kind of putting something kind of like the WRT project, the Open WRT project together, but, you know, their own project. So you might want to check them out.
No, I wasn't there. But
I'll check it out.
Sounds pretty cool.
I'm curious to see because, I mean, what are the other advantages? Having more control over your port forwarding? I think with the current firmware that I have on my Linksys firewall, I think it could handle, I don't know, maybe 15, 20, I think it could do.
Because I was just up that the other day.
15, 20?
I think it's 10, actually.
10?
Yeah.
No, mine's got more than 10, I think.
I'd look at it, but I don't want to screw things up for
you. Yeah, if you don't know what the hell you're doing, you can turn your router into a brick.
Alan looks, and all of a sudden, all of our connection just drops off the face of the planet.
Right? Yeah, probably not a good idea to do during the show.
Trying to see what devices does it's openwrt.org is the project site.
Yeah, I put the link on the RC.
Yeah, let me see here. What supported hardware?
Does Linksys, I think a couple of D-Link ones.
Wonder if I have the Linksys. There's a bunch of them. Holy mackerel. I got to find Linksys in this list. Down at the LK, WRT, what do I have?
On mine, there's only 10.
I got the forward. WRT54G version 1.1.
No, I don't think I have a supported one. I kind of figured I wouldn't. Mine's a chintzy one.
It's pretty good, the one that I got. Apparently it has, let's see, based on the Broadcom chipset, it's got 4 meg flash and 16 meg SD RAM. So it's definitely supported. 125 megahertz CPU. Pretty good for a small device, I mean.
Yeah. Let me see. But, yeah, there's supposedly, from what I hear, there's a whole lot of stuff you could do with the OpenWRT firmware. It's supposed to be really, really, really good.
I mean, it's cool as shit that you can push up the signal output. You could triple it, I think.
Yeah. I don't have one of those, so.
We'll just wait till the FCC, the little white van comes around to your house.
You'll be able to see your antenna glowing through the wall. It's a little hot right now.
Yeah.
But like I was saying, you know, you can actually push that so much that your signals, your ability to receive the signal will actually go down.
Yeah.
Because you'll be overloading the little car.
Starts to distort.
Yeah. Not good. Plus, you'll be bleeding over into some military bands, I think, the G.
So you'll get the Air Force knocking at your door?
Yeah. Yeah, if they get pissed at you.
Oh, I bet that would be all kinds of fun. The whole Men in Black scenario, you know?
Knocking on your door.
Listen, you got to turn off your wireless access point or no one will ever find your body.
I'm curious to see how well Astros would work on running it off your router.
Hey, you know what? Give it a try, because the worst that you could do is mess it up and just reflash the firmware again.
Right? Yeah, it says that, that model that I have, you can just refresh the firmware and it'll reset it. I might have to play around with it.
So there we go. And next time on the Linux Link Tech Show, Pat tells us about his adventures with the OpenWRT.
If anybody's played around with it, yeah. You know, shoot me an email. Let me know what your experiences are, or post on the forum.
Yeah, unfortunately, mine is a Rev 5, not a Rev 4.
Oh, I don't know. What's the one that I brought over? I have no idea. It's a wireless B, though.
Yeah.
Can you do it on wireless B?
I don't know if you can do it on the Bs. I know the Gs were based on Linux to begin with. But when they went to Rev 5, they kept the same name, but they screwed up with the system inside.
Let's see, this one versus...
What's that?
Up here with the number.
I'm looking at this switch here, this route sitting over here at Alan's house.
Yeah, upgrade Alan's right now.
Hold on a sec, I'll do it right now.
No, mine doesn't work.
Nah, it doesn't.
Try it anyhow. What's the worst that can happen?
You gotta have one of the WRT54 models.
If you're gonna do it, go for the GL model. Because that's the difference between the G and the GL. When they went to Rev 5, the GL, they kept Linux on.
Aha.
Awesome.
You can set up SSH.
They cut up
your router.
Half the memory on the thing and everything. They fucked it up for the 5, but I didn't realize that when I bought it. So.
That's what you get.
Yeah, next time I'll pay attention. But
do we cover everything that was in your post there to LX or Pat?
What else? You talked about Asterisk and SIP phones.
Which are really cool, by the way. You know, there's a lot of people that badmouth those Grandstream budget tone SIP phones, saying that they're crap quality and stuff like that. And other than, you know, getting a broken one from VoIPSupply.com right off the bat, they sound really, really nice.
Yeah, we were talking last night and it was nice and clear.
You know, it really is, you know, at or just a hair maybe below regular, you know, phone quality stuff. And,
yeah, I thought it sounded pretty good.
You know, it sounds really good to me, so I'm pretty happy with it. You know, I might consider getting some more for my house at some point in time.
Awesome.
Plus, you know, being able to, like, you know, have extensions in your house, and, like, I have extension now that I can dial Alan's house, Dan's house, Pat's house as an extension of my phone system. Now, that's just some cool shit.
That is cool shit.
You know
shit.
What I mean? That's just, you know, if you're into geeky stuff, like, that's some cool geeky shit.
Like, you got the bat phone to everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
Well, because most of our listeners are on BinRev, we got to probably close this up. I guess what we could do is Frapper shout-outs.
We already lost them, I think. So.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, we could do some Frapper shout-outs. We're over 800, by the way. We're at 802 right now.
Ooh.
1,000.
2,000.
3,000. For one first.
So if you haven't registered on the Frapper mount, please do so, and we'll definitely give you a shout-out during the show.
Right.
Let me go down there and
your name
do
for
some shout-outs.
Click.
Let's see, we've got Prekett from Longmount, Colorado. We've got Trevor Parsons from London, England. We've got Gerard from Vendam, Holland. We've got Gaurav Nisra from, it's cut off, I can't see it. Nathan Ballon from Rossville, Michigan. We've got Jorge Macias from Zamora, Spain. I think I was in that town. We've got Mike from Little Canada, Minnesota. We've got Walter from White Rock, British Columbia in Canada. Richard Defries from Chicago, Illinois, who I think I met at the Ohio Linux Fest, Richard. So big shout out to him. We've got Eric Gisler from Athens, Georgia. And we've got Mark from, you know, this pisses me off, the new version of Frapper with the locations. It cuts off. It's kind of annoying. I can't see where this person's from if they have their street address listed. So Mark is from Von Duloc, Wisconsin.
Somewhere, yes.
And the other guy was from, hold on, Gaurav Misra. He was from, give me a sec. Waiting for it, waiting for it.
Are we taxing Alan's network
like
over there?
With us. I think we are because the IRC server's stopping over here while he's like looking for stuff.
Wichita, Kansas, Guru well,
Frapper from. Does that every time. Even when we're at Dan's, Frapper brought
the hell does
the
that do? Download the whole fucking internet or something?
Yeah,
when you update
everything
the page?
Every time Pat brought that up there, the show went to hell.
Yep.
We need to
get him wireless. He's got to be connected to your next door neighbors or something like that. Shit, you know?
Just for the Frapper map, right?
There's a couple open ones in the neighborhood.
There we go. We need to get the, freaking salad dish out and start playing it around and see what's going on.
I've got a satellite dish down in the basement.
All we need to get
is one of the little USB ones. Hook it to the front of
so
it.
So we can point we somebody's network?
Yeah, exactly.
Parabolic freaking wireless.
I was going to work one morning. It was like garbage day, so I was going to work. And it was one sitting on top of a garbage pile. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to take the damn thing.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with it. I couldn't find to see if there was a satellite, you know, unit to go with it on it. But I got the dish. So half the battle.
That's hysterical.
So, Dan, how are you liking your bandwidth? Pretty good so far?
You only had a couple hiccups. We had a power outage, and the modem lost its configuration, and they had to go in and reprovision it, which caused some outage on Saturday morning, which I wasn't too happy with. But other than that, the only problem I really have right now is the modem is over by the TV, and I want to get it over here, but then I'm going to have to get a long cable.
Got to run cable, yeah.
Or, because right now I have an Ethernet cable that just wraps around, because I have that huge cable you gave me, Link, finally came in handy, because I run it along the floor and wrap it around, hugs the wall, and comes all the way around over into the corner here. And I'd have to kind of do the same thing with the cable to be able to do that, so I can get the modem over here onto my UPS. Or otherwise, I'm going to have to run a long extension cord, you know, follow the Ethernet cord all the way over to the modem. Because my wife said the other day, my daughter found pleasure in cutting the power off by pressing the power switch on the whatever it's called, the power strip over there.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so working on it. Working on perfecting the new server setup.
So when did we try actually all being at separate locations at the same time?
We did that last night, didn't we?
I mean, during the show, while you're pushing up the stream.
Well, I don't know. Whenever you guys say we need to.
I would imagine that's going to happen soon enough, because it's going to start getting icy around here in another month or so.
And we're all going to get the HIV pretty soon, so.
And, yeah, when the HIV goes around and the ice is on the ground, we'll be doing it from home. That's the way it works. Just like when you were here, Dan, so you can still be part of the action.
Don't hear from C4 for a while, but man, we talk about the Open WRT and look at him go. Can't shut him up on the IRC now.
Oh.
Yeah.
Holy moly. Looks like he's
got
something to say.
Got him started.
That's good, man. Let him have it.
Are we done with the Frapper shout-outs already?
Yeah, we're done.
We're done. Okay. All right.
That's it, boys and girls.
Alan, you have anything to say?
No, I'm good, thank you.
That's good to hear.
I have to have my wife come back on again sometime.
Yeah, definitely.
Because she actually sat over there across the room this whole time. I was going to say, hey, why doesn't she come over? But, she's waving now.
Sitting over there laughing at you, huh?
No, she's
look at my husband.
She's on
tell us she has to wave a lot harder for us to hear it through the.
She's on her MySpace account. No, she's not. MySpace. All right, I'm going to play us a song out of here.
Play us out.
We got another Jonathan Colton special. I'm interested in this one. It's We Will Rock You, and We Are the Champions, his version.
Real good.
What?
Yeah, it's real good.
I have not heard it yet, so this will be my first and your first. And
yep.
We're all virgins to this except Link.
Real good. You'll like it.
So next week, who's our guest next week, Pat?
I think we're talking to System 76 people.
I look forward to that.
And then we have
Patrick Volkerding.
Patrick Volkerding.
Yeah, I'm looking forward.
Link is excited.
Ooh. Yeah, I said to Pat, you know, all
excited,
we need to get...
Excited, man. I'm rubbing myself over here.
All we need to get is, after this, all we need to get is Linus. And once we have him, we can call it quits then. We're done.
Well, for the Patrick Volkerding episode, I'm going to have to bring, like, a mop. Because these guys are going to be so wet, you know, from wanting to speak to Pat.
I'm going to have to upgrade my laptop, for I still haven't upgraded it to Slack 11 yet.
I haven't done anything over here with that either.
Oh, man. I'm going to have to do that.
Yeah. Maybe I'll register another domain this week and get the old stuff on there so we can fix all the mirrors. Yeah. All right. I'm gonna play us out of here. Thanks a lot for listening. Catch you next week.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Buddy, you're a boy, make a big noise, playing in the street, gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace, kicking your can all over the place. We will rock you. We will rock you. Buddy, you're a young man, hard man, shouting in the street, gonna take on the world someday. You got blood on your face, you big disgrace, waving your banner all over the place. We will rock you. We will rock you. Buddy, you're an old man, poor man, pleading with your eyes, gonna make you some peace someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace, somebody better put you back into your place. We will rock you. We will rock you. We will rock you.
I've paid my dues time after time. I've served my sentence but committed no crime. And bad mistakes I've made a few. I've had my share of sand kicked in my face, but I've come through. You're the champions, my friend. We'll keep on fighting till the end. We are the champions. We are the champions. No time for losers, 'cause we are the champions. Me fame and fortune and everything that goes with it, I thank you all. But it's been no bed of roses, no pleasure cruise. I consider it a challenge before the whole human race, and I ain't gonna lose. We are the champions, my friend. Keep on fighting till the end. We are the champions. We are the champions. No time for losers, 'cause we are the champions.
So we can paint anything we want. anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Mm, yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up. Just shut up.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Mm, yeah, with my tongue brush.
Oh, crap. Added the wrong file.
It's over.
That'll do it. Has anybody left? No, they must have all cut out. That's too bad. Hey, honey, do you want to say hi?
Just yell it.
Hi.
There you go. Maybe next week. Maybe not. Who knows? Thanks for listening. Wait. Yeah. Good day. Holy moly. What the hell are you guys doing over there?
Shutting up. Can you actually hear us alright? Because you're only listening to a balanced microphone.
I can, yeah, but you're very faint, and that's because we're listening to...
Hello?
Yeah, we're listening through Alan's microphone, but now I can hear Pat.
Yeah, it's because I got the microphone in front of my face.
And I got a little bit of an echo, too.
That's because you're hearing me through my headphones. The headphones are really loud.
No, I'm hearing me through your headphones?
Yes.
Okay.
Hold on. Let me turn it down. Hold on a sec. Let me just get set up here.
The Linux Link Tech Show is proudly sponsored by Open Country, providers of OCM, award-winning systems management software for the Linux enterprise, and exclusive sponsors of the Webmin Project.
The Linux Link Tech Show is on.
What? What?
How's that, man? You have the echo up still?
No, but... You're cutting in and out.
Cutting in and out?
Give me some talk.
Check, check, check. 1, 2, 1, 2. Check. Mic number one, mic number one. Aren't we having lots of fun? I'm half Jewish from the waist down.
All right, can we turn Pat down a little bit? Because he is, like, blowing everybody else away.
We could, but Alan's not up here yet.
He's getting... Thank you.
All right. Mm-mm.